Blog Talk Radio.
Winner with more than 23 albums and over 44 years performing. A native of Mississippi, started in the 60s performing gospel with the Art Reynolds Sisters. In 1967, recorded with Capitol Records her first hit song, Baby Mine. With Motown, Thelma Houston claimed the top of the pop and R&B and dance charts with her high-powered rendition of Don't Leave Me This Way, which you just heard. And, of course, we all know it. It's her first solo female artist at Motown to win the Grammy Award for Best R&B Female Vocal Performance. She has been inducted into the Dance Music Hall of Fame in New York City and honored as an Apollo legend. Thelma Houston has not skipped a beat. She performs over two. She has over 200 performances annually, and we're honored to have her with us tonight. Without further ado, we introduce to you Thelma Houston. Thelma, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
How are you?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. What a lovely thank you for that introduction.
Well, thank
it doesn't
you.
Seem like I've been around long enough to have done all that stuff.
I want to introduce to you, Rich.
When you start to, that's for when you start to make lists of things, it's like, all kidding aside, on the other hand, I go out and I do my gigs, and let me say that it's probably not 200 now. It's probably more like 150 or 140, something like that. I don't like go out and leave in January and come back in December. I'm pretty much out on the weekends and stuff. But other than, I mean, I do my job, and I still have time to, I mean, I get to do my new thing, which is writing and producing and that kind of thing. And then I I'm also a family person. I have children and grandchildren and stuff. So I just live my life, you know what I mean? And I don't think about the things that I've done necessarily until I do this, do interviews like this, and when people kind of, you know what I mean, say it. Thinking it's like, wow, really? Do you know what I mean? I mean, I'm so busy living my life, so it's kind of nice to hear that.
I totally understand, and I was talking to Richard Allen, our host, which we'll introduce in just a little bit, and I was telling him we're going to need half an hour just to introduce Thelma Houston. And we were laughing because you've done so much, and we want to talk about all the things that you've done, well, not everything, but I want to take the time to thank you. I know it's a Sunday. I know it's about 3 o'clock there in Los Angeles. Are you in LA now?
Yes, I am, and it is 3 o'clock.
All right. And I also want to thank Miles High Productions for making this possible. So thank you so much for your time. We value you. We thank you so much for being with us. And I'd like you to say hello to Richard Allen, who is also the host of our network.
Hi, Richard. Yes. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you so much for taking some time to be with us today.
Oh, well, thank you for inviting me. I think we've kind of made this appointment, not appointment, but set this interview up before the holidays, I think.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, so I've been looking forward to it.
Thank you again. I guess the first thing we'd like to ask you is there anything other than, I mean, we have the EP, but is there anything other than, that you're working on currently that you'd like to talk about?
Well, what I'm working on now is, well, of course, I'm continuing. I enjoyed the process of working with Janitor, whose name is Gabe Noel. That was a wonderful and new experience for me to enjoy at this level. I'm continuing to do that. And also, I'm working on a show that I will be debuting, in Maine in July of this year. And what that is, it's a show that, it's going to be, I haven't really titled it, yet, but it's a Motown show, not necessarily a Motown review, but a Motown show that is going to be based upon my experiences with a particular artist on the Motown label while I was there. Because although Motown, I was at Motown for many years, so during that period of time, I had I got to tour some with the Four Tops. I got to tour with the Temptations. I got to tour with Smokey Robinson. I was produced by Stevie Wonder. I had a good relationship with Diana Ross. These kinds of experiences, and I will talk about these people while I'm doing music. That was something that artist recorded. So that's the show that I'm working on now, which is I'm very excited about that.
Yes, it sounds like it's going to be a wonderful project, and maybe you can come back and talk about it with us when this show has been produced.
Yeah, I'll come back and tell you what the response is. You know, there's so many, but I think as long as you keep it on an individual, that the thing about the Motown is that that's such a big story, on so many levels. And the thing is that my experience with the company was when they moved to California. So that's a whole nother era. I wasn't on the label when they were back in Detroit. And so my experiences out here, it would be totally different from what they were back in Detroit. I think it's an interesting concept. And so that's what I'm doing. Hello? Hello? I can't
hear
you. I can now.
Can you hear me?
Yes,
okay.
I can. Uh-huh.
I'm not sure what happened to our other line. I always like to know, I'll have Richard come back shortly when we can connect him, but I always like to know I'm trying to get my notes here together.
Mm-hmm.
In the beginning of from your childhood, your family life, what were your inspirations and that helped form your musical life? And I know you've done gospel, but backtracking to the beginnings of your life, what were your inspirations?
Well, I was born and raised until the age of 10 in Mississippi. And my early introduction to music was through listening to the radio with my grandmother. My grandmother in the South, there's a lot of, especially during that time, there were a lot of shows that were just really played gospel music. And my mother, my grandmother, was a big fan of Mahalia Jackson. And so I used to listen to the Mahalia Jackson songs and learn how to sing these songs. This was a very early age, like around 3, I would guess, because that's about the time that my grandmother came to live with my mother and myself. When I was, when the lady that was our Sunday school teacher and was also a babysitter, which was probably before my grandmother came to live with us, she learned that while she was practicing her hymns for church for the coming Sunday, that I had learned them. I knew the words. I knew when to come in and when to stop. And so this music ability or whatever, was there from a very early age. And I started singing in the church programs. And when we moved to California, I was able, continued to sing in different churches. I would sing at the school programs as much as they would allow me. I was always in the choir. And so when I got to junior high school, there was a principal there who was very, probably one of those teachers when people say they were inspired by a particular person at that time. Well, this teacher, though he was the principal, he was really involved in the young people there and helping them to reach their better self, become their better self, and whatever it was, not just sports or if you were an obvious singer or whatever. It was just, when I go back to reunions, each student, that I've, that come to these, and that when they, everybody had their own experience from him, and everybody isn't in show business, but he was just that person, just that kind of person. And he told me when I was in the seventh grade that if I kept at it, and if I did the right things, and if I stayed in school, and that he felt very certain that I could have a career, you know, making music. And I said, really? I mean, it had never occurred to me that, you know, before that point, like a living. I mean, you know what I mean? Because it wasn't like we had gone to any kind of performing arts school or anything. This is regular schools where most of the, arts were, of course, you know, they were taught, but not a whole lot of them was like, okay, you know, when you get out of school, go and really go to Hollywood, you know, go be a singer and actor and whatnot. They really wanted you to go to more, your conventional, traditional jobs. And so that's the way I was looking at it, and I didn't know quite what then, because, I just couldn't figure it out. But when he said that, I was like, okay. So with that in mind, I kept being in the choir and when I got through high school and stuff. And then when I made the decision to really go for it, then everybody thought I was crazy. It's like, what? You're going to do what? You're going to be a singer? Have you lost your mind? You know, so that was a whole other thing, you know, where that I went through that period in time. But you just kept prestigious, you just keep doing it. And eventually after a while, I met up with, after a marriage and having a couple of kids, I met up with Mr. Mark Gordon, who was then the manager of the Fifth Dimension, and the Fifth Dimension were having big success with a song called Up and Away, and they were on these major tours, and so he had the time to spend with developing me or putting me with people that could help me in terms of learning how to put a show together, making sure that I rehearsed, that I got the, he put me up with Jimmy Webb, who became, produced me and wrote the songs for my first album called Sunshower. And from that, and that's how it happened. So Mark got me, that did the very first part when I was rough and he was teaching me a lot and that, but then he became very, very busy with the Fifth Dimension, and then he had another artist, I'm trying to think of his name, Al Green, he had a song called A Snake and Show and Tell, Al Wilson. That was another one of Mark's art. And then he had some other ones, and he got a record company, and he started doing all these things and became very, very busy. And we didn't have the kind of relationship that we'd had. He had very little time, and so I was left to kind of try to figure things out myself, you know. And then about that time is when I met Suzanne DuPass, when I was working in Las Vegas, and the Motown was there with, that was Diana Ross's first show, a solo show. And they would come to see my show, which was, I was playing in one of the lounges, and they were all fans of the Sunshower album that Jimmy Webb had produced on me. So anyway, they were coming to see my show, and they asked and wanted me to come on their label. And so when I signed with Motown, that was not something that Mark wanted to be a part of, so he said that he could no longer be my manager. He left, and then the rest was, you know, there we are.
I'm back, Miss Houston. I apologize.
Hi, what happened? What happened? Okay.
I was talking, and all of a sudden, no one could hear me.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
You actually left off exactly where I wanted to pick up, right at Motown.
Okay, so when I was
you met with Suzanne DePass.
Yes, and Suzanne DePass was she was Barry's creative assistant. And so she was very interested in them signing me to the label, and I wanted to pursue it because, of course, you know, when you're doing that time, during the time that I was growing up, which was like in the 60s and the late 50s and that. I mean, you know, everybody, if you were a singer, if you wanted to have anything, like, you know, you wanted to be on Motown label because that's the label that everybody was on, the people that everybody
was
buying. So, of course, I was excited about it, and they informed me that they were going to be moving to California and that this would be a new adventure. This would be something, and I thought, well, that makes sense to me. And so anyway, I made the decision to come to the label. And I recorded a lot at the label. And the good thing, there are many good things about being there. First of all, it's a wonderful experience of being on a label that has such a history that, I mean, if you just say that you're associated with that label, there's a level of respect that is just given to you just because you're so associated with that label. The other thing about the label is if you are a writer and you happen to write a song that you know, everyone, like the creative team or everyone that feels that is a hit for a particular artist, even if you are, I'm just gonna say. You might have a job other than being a songwriter or something. You might be doing something else, but you have this great idea, and they said, you know what? Well, that person could end up producing you in the studio because they've written a song that everybody agrees would be a good fit for you. So you have the opportunity to work with lots of different people on lots of different levels, which prepares you when you go out into the world. You know, to the real world to see how it is. You know what I mean? You're not going to always have this particular person with you. You're going to always have these musicians traveling with you. You're going to have to adapt and figure it out, you know, while you're out there. And so that was really, really good. Of course, the other thing is that they, you know, you keep going, you keep doing, you keep doing, you keep doing, because at that time it wasn't about, for me anyway, because I didn't write my own material at that time. And really, within myself, didn't have a very clear concept of who I was in terms of, you know, the kind of music. I knew that I was really a pop singer, more than just strict R&B. But at that time, if you recall, or if you, you know, there's a big divide, and at that time of what was represented as pop and what was R&B, and so. So I saw myself being able to do something, doing one thing, the way that it is out there in the record industry or within the radio industry, that there was a certain image of how people saw, you know, particularly black artists, and that's what you did. You could do your R&B on Warwick, or, you know, who were able to get through and become the pop and R&B, you know. So that was a thing. And so anyway, I kept recording to get to whatever that was that I needed to do the major hit, to get a hit. And it was through doing the song, which was found by, again, Suzanne Fass on an album which had been recorded by Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes, a song called Don't Leave Me This Way. And when I heard it, I liked the song. But I didn't have any at that time. My, you know, listen to it. I didn't have an idea of, you know, of what kind of an arrangement to do. But Hal Davis, and not Hal David of Bacharach and Burt Bacharach and Hal David. It's Hal Davis who was the producer of some of the Jackson 5 hits. And he had other hits on the label, on Motown label. But anyway, he came up with a definite pattern, you know, Don't Leave Me This Way, the way that he produced it was designed to do exactly what it did. And that was be a big dance song. And he did it almost, I wouldn't say scientifically, but there was a particular beat, and he used certain instruments differently, like bass on it, to make people were kind of wondering, what is that instrument that's in there? It was going, da-da-da-da-dum, da-da-da-dum, that part. That's actually an electric bass, so people think it's something else. So to create these different sounds and make people dance. So when I heard the finished product, because I was going out and dancing at least once or twice a week, you know, with my friends, going to the clubs and stuff, I knew that people were going to want to dance to it because it had all the elements of any other, you know, dance song that I had, you know, heard in, you know, in the clubs. So I knew that. But I had, but as far as the commercial success of it, I had no idea. I had didn't have a clue. As a matter of fact, when Mr. Gordy first heard the song, he didn't think the song was hit, and the song almost didn't get released. So I kind of, you know, that kind of didn't have great hope for it. But of course, woo, here we are. You're talking to me today.
Yeah, that song, we in preparing for the show, we, of course, looked up that particular song, which you won the Grammy for, and
right.
It is amazing how many different collections, 70s, dance music, R&B collection albums that song is on. It's dozens. It's literally dozens of albums.
It's just dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens. And you know what? The sad part about that, on the one hand, it's a good thing because it means that your name and everything else is still out there. But the other part of that is because of all of the different legalities and things that are involved in that, it was very difficult to collect the royalties from all of those different versions. Some of them you do, but collectively, it's like 180 some versions. About 180. We went online. It's amazing. So. That's good and the bad.
Well, the good thing is it did foster a lot of success for you, and we know who you are.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And as a result of it, I have a career. So
yes.
So if you think from 1975 or 76 when that song came out, and we're now in 2013. You know, and it was on, that's the biggest hit I've had. The only one I've had that was like that big, I've had one top five, but nothing like that. I mean, that's good. I'm very happy about it, and I feel fortunate that, you know, that it's done what, you know, what it's done. And I, you know what I think it's because it was really done well. It wasn't just something that was just, you know, thrown together. It was done well. The music is really good music, and there was some thought behind it.
Yes, and what you said earlier about having the formula for a dance hit—that one certainly does, because it breathes between the verse and the chorus, and then it has
right.
a nice little musical break at the end. And the introduction, of course, it was done very well. Because as soon as the orchestra hits, you know what the song is, and I was a little bit young at that time, but you could just envision people running out to the dance floor once they hear the introduction start.
That's what happens. Once the introduction starts, it's almost like, and to this day, it still does that. People are kind of,
yes.
It's almost like it's a call to, you know, they get up and they start coming to the dance floor. It's so funny, even at corporate dates, you know, that are not necessarily, you know, with the dance floor and stuff, people would get up from the table and start going, a few people would start going to the side of the room, you know, those grand ballrooms of it, so they could do their movement to it. It's really fun. It's great, though. It's great.
Yes.
I love it.
Tell us a little bit about what the creative process at Motown was like. I mean, did you have to report to the studio every day for recording assignments, or did you get them beforehand? Did it bring you into the studio?
I'll tell you what my process was, and how you know, there were some instances where there were producers that would really be looking for new material or would write new material that, for me. Then there were some who felt that, you know, a particular song would be good, and if I did it, okay, but if somebody else did it, okay, and so, you know, we'd see who did it the best, and, you know, that would happen as well. So what I learned, for me, what worked was, is that I, and to answer your question, yeah, I would be in the studio pretty much, at least, you know, a lot, at least on the average of at least 2 or 3 times a week. But what I learned to do is I would find it, because sometimes, you know, there could be somebody in the studio cutting a track for you that had your name on it, and they would be cutting the track for you, and you wouldn't even know it, and you wouldn't be sure, you know what I mean, and it would be, might be a great song, whatever, but they hadn't talked to you about it, or said, listen, I have a song for you. I want you to come in, and then let's see if this is your right key for this song so that we can cut it. So to cut it. Now, that's the way I was accustomed to recording. You know, with Jimmy Webb, he would say if we said, okay, if we agreed that this is a song we're gonna cut, you know, if we'd learn it, we'd, you know, do it at the piano, and then when we'd go in to cut the track, I would go in, and with the musicians, we would come up with the groove and the key and all this stuff, and then we'd cut the track, and then I'd go back in and recut it, you know, cut it over the, you know, like that, if we, you know, and did it. But more than likely, the best tapes would be the ones that I was doing live with the band. That was the way. So that's where I was accustomed to recording, even with the gospel group that I was with. But when I came to Motown, they just say, okay, come go to the studio. You're in the studio at studio blah blah blah, at so and so so and so with blah 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 producing it. And you say, huh? Okay. So what I learned to do, because that's when, and you know what, that had worked for them. That's the way apparently that worked for them for all those years. So why would they, you know what I mean? Why would they do it any other way, right?
Sure.
So what I learned then was to, I found who was the person that would do most of the bookings, who would be booking the studios, and I learned that person that had developed a relationship with that person, and that person would let me know who was going to be cutting what on Thelma Houston. I would just show up at the studio. Now, nobody was ever angry about it. They were always very happy. Nobody ever said, I didn't want her, don't let her come in. That never, nobody was ever angry if I showed up to a session. And it just made things better. But I took that upon myself. So because that was going on, then I was in the studio a lot, because a lot of people was cutting a lot of stuff, trying to get that elusive single hit, which turned out to be a hit that was done by Philly International.
Yes. Yes, it was. And I do remember Hal Melvin in the Blue Notes version of that, and I listened to it again recently.
It was an American Hustler. Wait a minute. What is it? Was it American Hustler? Yes. It's just, I just heard it the other night, yeah. You know that movie,
that
American Hustler?
Yes.
It's in that movie. Have you seen it?
No, I have not seen the movie, but I
okay. Well, I'm not
going to
tell you. I'm not going to tell you about it, because I got all. I heard that first and start, but I didn't hear that. Ring, boom. I didn't hear that, but I heard something. I said, "Ooh," and then it said, "Oh." But yeah, it was Harold Melvin in the Blue Notes version.
When the song,
you'll see it when you go see the movie.
When the song was presented to you, was it presented as a cover tune, or was it presented just as a tune that they wanted you to record?
it was presented to me as go pick up that Harold Melvin, the Blue Notes album, and listen to a song called Don't Leave Me This Way and tell me what you think about it. Because if you like it, we're going to go into the studio and cut it tonight.
Wow. Wow.
I mean, I'm a huge Teddy Pendergrass fan. I love Harold Melvin.
Me too.
I did a tour with Teddy Pendergrass. Did you?
Yes. The biggest, let me put it like this. The biggest audience, the biggest audience that I have ever performed in front of with only two people on the bill was at the Hollywood Bowl. And it was headlining Teddy Pendergrass with Thelma Houston.
Wow.
Yeah.
And
we both did Don't Leave Me This Way. Because I was sure I wasn't going to not do my song. and you know, he had the little turn on the lights, because, you know, he had all those. And I said, well, he got all those. Yes, I don't have but this one. I ain't giving it up. And they said, well, now, this is a terrible thing. This is probably terrible, terrible to say, but I'm saying it. I didn't have, that was my biggest hit. That's the reason that I was on that tour, was because of that hit. And the reason that they, you know, had wanted me, because otherwise they would have had somebody else if they thought that they, you know, on the tour, right, with him.
That's right.
And we did Cherry Hill, New Jersey. We did the thing, and we did lots of dates. And so, he was fine with it. He was fine with it that I'd be the one to do Don't Leave Me This Way, you know, which I think was pretty cool on his part. But that, because, you know, like I said, that was the only hit that I had. But I thought it was gracious of him because he was the one that had cut it first. Right?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, hello. Did he fall again?
Hi, Thelma. This is Tanya Maria.
Hi. Did he fall out again?
I think we're having technical issues on his end, but that's all right. We are going to take a quick break, Thelma. We're going to be right back. You're listening to coloredpeople.net, a multicultural artistic network. If you'd like to call in and say hello, the number is 949-209-2956, and we have the wonderful, energetic, the legend, Motown legend, the Grammy Award winner, Thelma Houston, and we will be right back.
And
hello?
We're back with, we're here, Miss Houston, we are here. Can you hear us?
Oh, okay.
We are back with the legendary Thelma Houston. The song that you just finished listening to was actually her first release, called Baby Mine. It was done on the Capitol label. What year was that, Miss Houston?
You know what? I just remembered something. That was my first. That was an effort. That was we wrote that song. That was the year that I was. That's when I was with the Art Bello Singers. So that would have been about maybe 65, 66, something like that. And it would be like the 60s,
okay.
End of the 60s. And the Art Bello Singers is the first group that I was with, gospel group.
Tell us a little bit about that group.
Okay, well, that group was formed with one of the friends I grew up with, and well, several of them. We were in around the same age, but Art was always a good keyboard player and songwriter, and that. And so, and he loved, and he was played at certain choirs around the area, and he started playing for ours, and at our church, and we just formed a group out of that, and we became very popular in the Los Angeles, Long Beach, Wilmington, San Pedro area. But anyway, we recorded an album, which was a very forward for that time, because it was using studio musicians, to play gospel music, and these were some of the top musicians at that time, like Ben Benet and. I can't think of all, but if the names, if I said them to you, if you were, knew the history of the music, then you would know who these, the kind of caliber of musicians that I'm talking about. Anyway, we did this album, and later the album, there was a group called the Doobie Brothers, and which recorded one of our songs, which is a song called Jesus Is Just All Right. And then yes. Another group covered our song. It was a group called the what's the name of that group? Anyway, they had a song called "Glory, Glory, Hallelujah," and that was off our first album too. So we were a little bit ahead of our time, and as a matter of fact, that song "Baby Mine," that's the Art Bello Singers doing backup on that, and we Art and I wrote that song "Baby Mine," which I had forgotten about.
Wow.
Yeah, that's, where did that song come in? And then that's how we got it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'm sure many of our listeners will remember Jesus Is Just All Right. That's a classic for the Doobie Brothers.
The Birds, that's the other group, I'm sorry. The Birds did Glory, 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 Hallelujah.
Okay.
Glory, yeah, Glory, Hallelujah. Since I laid my burdens down. Yeah.
Tell us what it was like being at Capitol at that time.
Well, I'll put it like this. The record came out on Capitol Records,
mm-hmm.
but we did very, not a whole lot of recording at Capitol. We did some, well, that was the first and only album that I did with the Art Bello Singers. And most of that album was recorded and there was a guy by the name of Gary Paxton. And Gary Paxton was a producer at the time. And he converted an old bus. And had taken the seats and things out of it and converted that bus into a portable, like a recording studio. He was kind of ahead of his time back then, at that time. And he do the songs and that, and then he would lease it, to Capitol Records. So we did very little. We may have done a couple of recordings at Capitol, and I think I may have done Baby Mine at Capitol. I don't really recall for sure. But we didn't do a lot of it, like I never would see. Well, I did meet Frank Sinatra. Well, that was later. Frank Sinatra wasn't at Capitol. He was at, when I met him, he was at Warner Brothers. But I didn't see, you know, like walking down the hall and you see all these people coming in and out of studios. I never saw that. Yeah. Not like being in Motown, you know, where you're recording over here and the Jackson 5 are down the hall and the Commodores are around the corner, you know, or, you know, not
you
like that.
You recorded two albums with Jerry Butler also.
Well, actually, it was one album, and the music that was put together on the second album were songs that we didn't feel good about from the first album.
I see.
So that's the truth about that one.
I liked the
first album very much, and I really really enjoyed working with Jerry Butler. He is really, like he says, the Iceman. He is so cool. He is too cool for school. He nothing bothers him, and he's very easygoing in the studio. And, you know, wasn't like, oh, wait a minute now, let me get my note. It was just the easiest, you know, project, or not, I wouldn't even call it a project, easy experience. That's what it was. An easy and creative experience. So far, the only one that I've done with another artist, just one other artist to that extent.
Thelma, this is Tanya Maria.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to talk to you about your recording with Janitor. For our audience sake, you did meet him in 2012, so they know a little bit of history. You were in a benefit concert in Northern California.
Right, in Northern California, we were at a benefit for a pet shelter, for an animal shelter. And we both had mutual friends that were doing the show, putting the show on. And so Janitor was asked to come in to play bass, and I was asked if I would you know, sing. And it was a fun, you know, a fun weekend. And I just really enjoyed his playing a lot, number one. And he had a great sense of humor. And at the time, I had been saying for a very long time that, you know, the next project that I put out, and however I put it out, it's going to be more, you know, going to have more of my hands in it. If that means more writing or more direct producing of it, it's going to be more than just here's a bunch of songs. And so that was in the back of my head. And so I thought, okay, you know how you sometimes say, okay, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. But then you finally say, okay, now this is the time to really, are you going to really do that? Or just stop talking about it if you're not really going to do it. So I said, okay, I made the decision. And so I thought, okay, are you good? You know, so in the back of my head, somebody says, oh, let's see if you'll work out. Because I have written before, but it hasn't always been a pleasant experience for me. I managed to get the job done, but it isn't like, and then a lot of times I feel that maybe my ideas somehow get lost because I don't really play an instrument well enough to be able to play my ideas, so I'm singing it. And sometimes somebody can play some chords or something and just say, and it'll be close to what you're singing, but it might not be it. And then sometimes they can just change it all around. And it might be better, but it's still not your idea.
Right.
And so I felt that I said, well, let me give this a shot. Maybe he can, you know, be that. So that was in like about maybe September, October or something, something like that. But anyway, we did that. And I asked him would he be interested in doing putting some ideas down and stuff, and he says, oh, sure. And so he went on tour, and I went on tour, and we got together. That was, I think, about 2011. So we got together in January of 2012. And while he was on tour and while I had come up with some ideas for some stuff, so that when we got together, the first song that we did was Enemy. And so he just got it. You know what I mean? You know, he just totally got it. You know, he gets, when we're working, it's just, you know, it isn't like, what is that? No, I don't hear it. You know, we just really, he'll put out an idea and I'll say, what about this? And say, yeah, that works. Or we're very supportive of each other, and we feel safe, because writing is really about trust, I think. And, you know, we feel that that you can throw your ideas out there and nobody's going to make you feel like an idiot about it, or so, you know what I mean? It's a lot, there's this one song that just really, this, I think this may have been the second song, and it's really more to me. It's really like a woman, it's a female kind of song, and it's about probably getting older, maybe. You know, in a way, but I said, but it's called Oasis, and it's about, you know, when you feel, it says, I was a lake, my waters, my clear. I can't think of the whole line right now, but it's like being dried. It's like being being on a desert, being dried up, and then all of a sudden the rain comes, and it becomes like the desert could become this beautiful oasis, because something magical happened. And so that's the idea. And so I said, I was a lake. I said, what about? I said, you know, like when you're a lake, just like I said to you. And he says, this is what his name is, Gabe. He says, I was a lake. My pristine water gone. I said, yes, Gabe, yes. Yes. A guy can say that. A guy that can say, my pristine water's gone, he gets it. Right?
Oh, that's great. Yes, that's great.
He doesn't like, my pristine, I wasn't dried up. What, huh? You know what I mean? So he absolutely got the, and that song isn't on this one. But I mean, that was the one that really sold it for me and let me, you know that this was right. And it has, and we've done wonderful things. And the idea of 42 was his, because 42, and I hadn't really thought about it like this, but 42 is the difference in our ages. And what it means is that, you know, there's only a generation gap when people are, you know, when you talk about things that are real, when you talk about integrity, when you talk about love, when you talk about those things are important and real, there is no right or wrong. There is no young and old. You know what I mean? You can really relate to those things. And so that's what we're trying to, that's what we want to convey in our writing, that there are times when we can come to an agreement on things.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And so for that, in that sense, it's been a remarkable, and he has allowed me to, you know, to open up. And I'm writing with him, and I might even consider writing with other people, you know, in the future, because I never even thought I'd be doing that, you know. But I'm just, it's wonderful.
I would like to play for our listeners the song Enemy, but tell us about the meaning of the song to you.
Well, to me, in a nutshell, what it means is that we can become our own worst enemy. And that's what this song is. Those things that you try to put on the surface and bring out and say it's that, it's that, it's that. Look within yourself and see, can you love yourself? Can you believe in yourself? Can you forgive yourself? And that then, can you be, that means can you be your own best friend? Because until you can be your friend, you really can't be anyone else's friend.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
We're speaking to Thelma Houston, and we're going to listen to Enemy from her EP with music producer Janitor. And we'll be right back.
Everybody say they love you. Don't. Everybody say they will. Won't. Oh, yeah. Oh, no. So confused. When you're on your own, are you keeping company? When you're all alone, are you sleeping with the enemy? Is the enemy in your bed? Are you living with the enemy? Is the enemy in your head? I wonder, the enemy says it won't work. Thank you.
You are listening to ColoredPeople.net, a multicultural artistic network sponsored by Zeal for Life Products. You're listening to Selma Houston, Grammy Award winner and Motown legend. The song is Enemy. It is from the EP 42 with Selma Houston and the producer Janitor. You can find it on iTunes. You can also visit Selma's website, selmahouston.com. And we're back to Richard Allen.
Are you still there, Miss Houston?
Yes.
Now, one of the things that jumps out at me when I listen to that song is your voice. And as someone who has listened to you since 1976, to hear your voice today, there is not much difference. And I know that there must be some genetics in there, but I'm sure that there are things that you do to keep your voice sounding so youthful and strong. And without revealing too many secrets, would you tell us what your lifestyle as a singer is all about?
Well, I'm happy to share the quote unquote secret. I think that being fit as much as one can is an important part. Is such an important part of enjoying life to the fullest. When we take care of ourselves, I think that's just so important. And I'm so happy that I, you know, and I'm not, and don't get me wrong, I'm not some fanatic. I'm not, you know, about anything. Not that I put people down who are vegans or vegetarians. I do sometimes when I feel like my body needs a rest from it, I will go on a vegan program for a while. But I eat meat. I try to cook as much as I can, but I try to live, you know, I'm moderate, with what I, you know, my habits. I'm not a person that abstains from this and abstains from that. You know, I try to live, you know, a healthy life, but with the idea that intake output, you know, you put it in, you got to do something to take it out. So you got to, you know, and cardio is so important. And I'm learning, how important it is for us, you know, like it's such a preventive, you know, way to take, you know, it just helps so much with later on and in your later years if you take care of yourself. And you know, like I said, not even being a fanatic about it, just a little, you know, you'll be so surprised and happy to see the rewards that you get from it. And for me, it's a necessary part because I plan to do this for as long as I can, do it gracefully, as long as I can, you know, go out there and deliver and in a way that is not an embarrassment to myself, then I want to continue to do it because I believe it's important to be creative and to keep working as long as you can. So being fit is a necessary thing for me. So what I do is I work out with a trainer 3 times a week, and when I'm not working out with him, I'm doing some kind of cardio, walking on the treadmill or doing the elliptical or walking, you know, and going hiking or, you know, something. And every once in a while, I don't do it, you know, like daily or, you know, every week, but occasionally I'll take some singing lessons to see if the old chops are, you know, what I need to do. Am I singing okay, you know, and, you know, because sometimes you can be doing damage and not really knowing it, so you need to have someone that you can trust to tell you the truth about what you're doing with your voice and stuff. Okay, you can't, you know, I don't try to burn the candle at both ends. I know that I'm, you know, I can't go out to the discos and stay all night, and, you know, it's another day out there. And I'm not, now, don't get me wrong, I'm not singing, but I don't go out occasionally and get my dance on and do that, you know, things, but I don't do anything. Everything is in moderation. I'm not an idiot. That's what I do.
Well, it's working.
Thank you.
In doing prep, we listened to your album, A Woman's Touch, and we came across another cover tune that you did, a cover tune of Sting's called A Brand New Day.
Right.
And when I heard that song, my jaw dropped. And I thought to myself, I don't remember this song being released, but whatever producer or executive was in charge of this project did himself a disservice by not releasing this tune because it's fantastic.
Oh, well, thank you.
We're going to close on that tune, but we're going to talk a little bit about that particular tune.
Well, you know, it's one of my favorites. It's one of my favorite songs because it has so many words and so many pictures in it. You know, it tells so many pictures in this song. I love Sting's work, and I wanted to do all of the background vocals myself. So it was, you know, as far as that had to be really precise, and that we did it, and I'm the executive producer on this. It was with Peter Angel, and we did a lot of this, just like Gabe and I are working. We did a lot of this at Peter's home, but the idea for that was I wanted to do a song of what I consider to be an album of classic songs. But I wanted them to be, I didn't want to do anything that had been done by females because, you know, unfortunately, when you do a song, everybody's going to make a comparison between you and the other female that records the song, which is not the case. You're doing it because you just happen to like it, and you're not doing the song to try to outdo this one or say, like, oh, yeah, I'm going to read it. I'm going to show how it's done. That's not the idea. It's just that you're doing your interpretation of a song that you love as well. But in order to not make that comparison, or not to have, you know, in order for that not to even come up, I chose songs that I didn't, you know, at least to my knowledge, don't recall them being hits or at least big hits, you know, by female artists. And so that's how we came up with these songs. Some of them, I wish, you know, there are some songs that didn't make the list, and there are some songs that are really favorites. Of, you know, of female artists. This is not to say that I don't like female artists, but, like, for instance, some of my favorite singers, you know, from my era would be, like, you know, Chaka Khan, or it'd be, like, Gladys Knight, or Aretha Franklin. You know, these are women that sing, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
If they do a song that you like, well, then once they've done it, what else for you to do to it, right? I mean, it's already been done. So that was another reason for not doing it. You know, not only just not for the comparison, but, you know, if somebody that you really like, I mean, you know, what else could I do to, okay, respect. What could I do to respect? You know what I mean? And I love respect,
yeah.
That song, but really, what could I, you know what I mean? Or neither one of us. But, you know, what else could I do to it that, you know, to make it a dance song? Neither one of us wants to be. You know what I mean? Yeah, there's nothing you can do to it, so you leave those alone.
Yeah.
And you go to some other, you know, other artists. And my favorite is Marvin. He's my favorite male artist of all time is Marvin Gaye. So, you know.
Yes.
Everybody wants to do this to Lover.
Well, we actually, I mean, again, when we heard that song, we just were so taken by it that we had to include it in the show. But we want to also talk about your career with working with films. And when you were at Motown, you did the title song for Bingo Long All-Star, Traveling All-Stars and Motor Kings.
Right.
You did two songs on that soundtrack, right?
Yeah, that was on the soundtrack for Bingo Long. I've done a few soundtracks. But while I was at Motown, there was a and I'm trying to think of the name right now. While I'm David Greenblatt. There was a young man that came in. Because when Motown, from what I understand, when Motown moved to Los Angeles, it was to keep, you know, do the Mo West, which was what the record label was called at the beginning, but it was also to become more involved in the music in the movie industry. As you all know, that shortly after they moved to California, they did the Billie Holiday story. So, during that time, this young man who was they brought in to head their film developing department came to see me in a show, and he felt that this was a singing show, a regular singing, you know, show, and he felt that I should consider acting. And at first, I took it almost as an insult because I thought he was saying to me, you know, your singing is not that great, so maybe you need to take up something, you know. Or I thought he might be saying, you were acting your way through those songs, or so, I don't know, something. I don't know what, you know, but I'm, you know, coming from Long Beach, California, and not really looking and not really ever having even considered an acting career. Never. I had never even thought of an acting thing. I was always geared to the music part of it, and I always thought the music was, to me, was very real and very, you know, and acting was just something else. But anyway, when he explained it to me, I said, well, that's another way of looking at it. And I did take, he found a teacher for me to study with, and I started taking acting. I started doing acting workshops with this lady. Her name was Joan Darling, who was a television director. And doing that, I did some television shows, had guest roles on some TV like Cagney and Lacey and Simon and Simon and these kind of shows. And during that time period, which was after Billie Holiday, they kind of the company had thought that they might do a story about Bessie Smith. And there was a script that was written, and I did kind of like maybe not a taping, but sort of did a show in front of some executives at Paramount in my idea of what Bessie Smith would look and sound like. And like I said, the script was done, and that was going to be done. But something happened, and it didn't, and that never, you know, happened. But, yes, there was plans at one time for me to do more. And I have done some things. I've done plays. I've done the musical Fame. I did that I traveled with that for a year in Australia. And that's probably the longest that I've done any stage production of anything. But I have done other things. I've worked with Debbie Allen on some projects. And I've done some television and stuff. So, I enjoy acting. But I don't go out, it's really difficult for me to take rejection. So I don't do that part too well, so therefore I don't go out that often. I only go out for shows when it's a sure thing. You know, when they said, we'd like to have Thelma in this part, is she available? You know, then we say, okay, which that doesn't come along a lot, but those are the ones that I like. You know, to go into, especially here in Hollywood, where there's not a whole bunch of roles for black folks, and you go into a studio when you go into a producer or a casting director to read for a part, you're going to be in there with every other major, with every major television actor or actress, you know, that's in Hollywood, and these people have tons more experience than you, and they're in there vying for the same job. So I tend to stick to that I know, that I do, and that I, you know, which is the singing. Not that I, what I mean by no, I stick with that I'm not going to have that much disappointment.
Well, we've got about 10 minutes left, but you are continuing to work in film soundtrack. Just this past year, the movie Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2 was released, and the soundtrack contained a song that was performed by you, and it's called Celebrationator. And what was that experience like?
Now, that was fun. That was a lot of fun because I got to work with with you know, someone with the producer of the of that movie, who
Mark Mothersbaugh.
Exactly, who is one of Devo. And so
yes,
I got a call. Well, he's a friend of Gabe, and not he is, but the lady, his assistant. You know, Hollywood, who you know that knows this, that knows them. She, this lady that works with his company knows my writing partner, and he, asked me to go to, would I be interested in doing it? And so I did, and they used it, and we might do some other stuff together. It was a lot of fun doing that. That was something different for me, the animation thing.
Yes. Now, you mentioned earlier you had grandchildren. Are they young enough to have seen that movie?
They knew about the movie.
Oh, good.
they knew who that was. Yes.
It must be a thrill for them.
Yeah.
Thelma, thank you so much for your time.
You so much, and I enjoyed talking to you, and thank you for keeping Thelma Houston alive on in my music. I appreciate it very much, and anytime you want to talk, let me know. And
absolutely.
Thank you for talking about the new stuff that we're doing, and hope to talk to you again real soon. And
likewise.
thank you to all your listeners, our viewers.
Yes, we will be tuned in to your July project, the Motown show, and we're looking forward to promoting that. And not that we need a lot of promoting, because that's going to be everywhere. But we definitely want to have you back and
talk about
other things you're doing. So thank you for your time. All the best to you, and thank you for the beautiful music that I'm from Brazil, and I remember in Brasilia, the capital where I used to live at the time. I remember when that song came out, and when Chip asked me if we wanted to interview you, I was beside myself. I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it.
Well, let me just say this. A couple of years ago, I was asked to appear at this festival in New York, and apparently, it's in the summertime, and apparently this festival is the biggest festival where all the people from Brazil come into Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I don't know, I mean, it was on maybe Fifth Avenue or something, as far as the eye could see, and it was all Brazilians, and they asked me to perform on that show.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
yes,
it was awesome.
Huge,
so apparently people know me in Brazil.
Oh, yes,
but
absolutely.
I've never had the opportunity to go there to work.
Oh, you have to. You have to go.
I would
the second
love
person.
To do that.
We had Bunny Ziegler last show. He said the same thing. He has never been to Brazil, so definitely you have to go.
Yeah, Bunny. Oh, Bunny and I tour. I sometimes tour with the Tramps, and Bunny is working with them.
That's awesome. It's been an honor to have both of you, thank you again for your time.
Well, thank you, and you have a wonderful day and a wonderful evening, and thanks, Richard.
He's right here.
Okay.
Thank you, Miss Houston.
Thank you.
It really has been an honor. We really appreciate you.
All right.
On.
Okay. Talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Yes, we hope to. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Thelma.
Good night. Bye.
Been hurt in some kind of love affair, and how many times do you swear you'll never love again? How many lonely, sleepless nights, how many lies, and how many fights, and why would you want to put yourself through all that again? Love is pain, I hear you say. Love has a cruel and a bitter way of paying you back for all the faith you ever had in your brain. How could it be that what you need the most can leave you feeling just like a ghost? You never want to feel so sad and lost again. One day you could be looking through an old book in rainy weather. You'll see a picture of him smiling at you when you were still together. You could be walking down the street, and who should you chance to meet but that same old smile that you've been thinking of all day. You could turn